we present The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler, dramatized in three parts by Bill Morrison, starring Ed Bishop as Philip Marlowe. The Big Sleep, Part 2. California, 1939.
Blackmail is a dirty business. I had been hired by old General Sternwood to protect his two daughters, Carmen and Vivian. Now, the first blackmailer, Geiger, was dead, and the body had disappeared. Another dead man had been found off Lido Pier. Carmen was a little crazy, and Vivian was a lot scared. She had mislaid a husband called Rusty Regan, but that was none of my business. It was none of my business that he had disappeared with the wife of a big-time racketeer called Eddie Mars. The old man hadn't hired me to find Regan. All I was doing was looking for a cheap crook who thought he could take over a blackmail racket that had gone wrong, a missing body, and a couple of killers. I went to pay a call on a grifter called Joe Brody.
Agnes, what? Quick, get behind the curtain.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah?
Are you Joe Brody?
So what?
I'm looking for Geiger.
Now, you got the wrong place. I don't know him.
That's very fine.
Go peddle your sense of humor somewhere else.
Joe, you have the books from the back room, but I have the list of clients. We ought to talk.
Okay. Come in. Yeah, hold it. Right there. It wouldn't bother me to use this gun.
Such a lot of guys around this town with so few brains. You're the second today who seems to think a gat in the hand means the world by the tail. You all watch pictures too much. Put it away, Joe.
You just shut up and grab a little air while you're doing it, huh?
The other one was Eddie Mars. Ever hear of him?
No.
Well, if he finds out where you were in the rain last night, he'll wipe you off.
Well, what would I beat Eddie Mars?
Not even a memory.
Look. Don't get me wrong. I'm not tough. I'm just being careful. I don't know Hell's First Whisper about you. You might be a life taker. Now, what's your story?
First, tell your lady friend behind the curtains I can see her neat little toes.
Oh, come on out, Agnes.
The blonde from the bookstore. Ever read Ben-Hur?
I knew you were trouble. How did you know we moved the books here?
I followed the van. It was a dumb move. Look,
tell me about the list.
Put the gun away first.
Okay. Now, talk.
The list is in a code I haven't cracked yet. About 500 names. Say you have 500 smut books at $1 a rental. Mm-hmm. We could make over $100,000 in a year. Personally, I think the blackmail angles are a big mistake. People who want secondhand sex jags are a nervous class. I think we should stick to rentals.
You think Geiger ran that kind of business right out on the boulevard and I worked in it? You're crazy.
If a racket like that has to exist and Hollywood is made to order for it, then right out on the street is where all the practical cops want it, for the same reason they favor red light districts.
Joe, are you going to let this cheesehead insult me?
Will you pipe down, Agnes? Now, this guy has good ideas.
I'll give you another.
Hmm?
You shot Geiger to get control.
You take chances, mister.
The trouble was, he wasn't alone when you walked in and whiffed him. So you lammed with the plate out of the camera, then came back to hide the body. That gave you time to take the books.
But I didn't kill him, mister.
You were made to order for the raft.
You can't frame me.
Remember the witness. She'll tell it whatever way I say.
God damn it, she would, too.
I see you know Carmen. Give me the negative, Joe.
Huh? I guess you think I'm dumb.
No, just average for a grifter.
Wait, Joe, who's that?
Just take it easy. Take it easy, I'll answer it.
I hate you, Carmen. Joe Brody.
Now, Carmen, for Christ's sake, put the gun down, Carmen.
I want my picture.
Carmen,
give me my picture.
Would you wait, Carmen?
I want my
Carmen.
Picture.
Carmen. Carmen, remember me? I'm your friend. I'm a friend of your father's.
Carmen, give me the gun.
Keep her away from me.
I'll get your pictures for you, Carmen. I'm your friend. Just give me the gun.
I want my pictures.
Give them to me, Brody. And be careful which pocket you put your hand in.
Here they are. Just keep her away from me.
You see? I told you so. I'd get them for you. Here they are. A present for you. I'll give them to you if you give me the gun.
I want my pictures.
Then give me the gun. Here you are. You've got your pictures now. Now, why don't you just let me take care of everything for you? I'll look after all this. I'm your friend. Why don't you go home?
Home?
You go home and wait for me.
You'll take care of me?
Sure, I will.
You're cute.
What you see is nothing. I've got a Balinese dancing girl tattooed on my right thigh. Now, why don't you go home and wait for me?
I like you. I like you a lot.
Wait for me.
I'll go home. I'll wait. Don't be long. Joe, are you okay?
She just grazed me. Would you
just let me alone?
Oh, a half-smart guy. That's all I ever draw. Never once a guy that's smart all the way around the course.
Let's hear it all now, Joe. How did you come by the pictures?
Take the air. I got enough chinning with you. Dust.
You are so dumb. Even if you don't dance off up at Quentin, you'll have such a bleak, long, lonely time ahead of you.
Well, you wouldn't go to the cops. Not if you're working for the Sternwoods.
I can't cover up two murders.
Two murders? What two murders?
Where were you last night?
I was watching Geiger's place. I wanted to know his connections. But all I see is a car up the street.
That was me.
Well, and one down where I am. It was empty. A Buick registered to Vivian Regan.
You know where the Buick is now?
Huh?
It was lifted out of the sea with a dead man in it who had been sapped before the dive.
Well, you can't pin that on me.
Why not? The dead man was the chauffeur. He took the car without permission. Furthermore, he was sweet on Carmen and didn't like the games Geiger played with her. So he follows her, shoots Geiger, grabs the picture, and runs. You follow him. Now, what cop isn't going to believe you knocked him off and took the picture yourself?
No. I chased the guy, okay? He crashed the Buick on a corner. He hit his head, I swear, and knocked himself out. So I searched him. I found the place. But then he wakened up and knocked me off the car and drove on, and that's all.
Where did you hide Geiger's body?
You think I'd go back there?
Well, somebody hit it.
Oh, God, is she back again?
Don't you have any other friends?
Well, maybe somebody call the cops.
Answer it.
Yeah, I'll go.
Joe Brody?
Yeah?
And that was Brody, dead. By the time I got his body away from the door and got down the stairs to the front of the apartment house, the killer was away and running. A tall kid in a leather jerkin. He kept running, so he had no car. I drove around the block to get ahead of him, and when he appeared out of the darkness, I showed him Carmen's little gun and pushed him in behind the wheel of my car. It was Carl, the handsome boy from Geiger's store.
You must have thought a lot of your queen, Carl.
What do you want?
What's it to be, me or the cops?
Is that a choice?
Put your gun over in the back seat, then we'll sit here and wait for the patrol car to pass. What's your full name?
Carl Lundgren.
Well, Carl, you shot the wrong guy. Joe Brody didn't kill your queen.
Who said he was?
You lived with him. He was like Caesar, a husband to women and a wife to men. Think I can't figure people like him and you out? Drive to Geiger's house. Just be quiet, Carl. You shouldn't have tried to take a swing at me. That's right, Carl. You know what it's like? Just hold your breath till you can't hold it any longer. Then tell yourself you have to breathe. You're black in the face. Your eyeballs are popping out. You have to breathe. And you're sitting strapped in the clean little gas chamber. And when you take that breath, you're fighting with all your soul not to take it. And it won't be air you'll get. It'll be cyanide fumes.
I loved him. He was mine. I came home and found him.
So you hid his body, then laid it out with black candles at his head and feet and promised him revenge.
Yes.
But you don't want to die, do you, Carl?
No.
Then you'd better cooperate. Plead guilty and tell your story just the way I want you to. Right?
Bernie Oles.
This is Marlowe.
Did your boys find a revolver on the chauffeur this morning?
That would be police business.
If they did, it had three empty shells in it.
How the hell did you know that?
I can show you where the slugs went.
Look out the window. You'll see me coming around the corner. What's the address?
When Olds came, we all went to see his boss, the district attorney, Taggart Wild, who had first recommended me to General Sternwood. He was with a Captain Kronjager of the L.A. police. We told our stories, and Kronjager began to look very nasty.
I love private dicks that play murders close to the waistcoat. Let me ask Marlowe a question. I might have take it that you did not report a murder last night and spent today foxing around so this kid could commit another murder this evening?
I guess I did wrong, but I wanted to protect my client.
Whoever that is.
I had no reason to think the boy would go gunning for Brody.
Such thinking is police business, Marlowe, so maybe Brody was living on borrowed time, but a life is a life.
Tell that to your coppers the next time they shoot down some scared crook running away up an alley with a stolen spare tire.
All right, that's enough of that. Now, what makes you so sure, Marlowe, the chauffeur shot Geiger?
He had the gun, the motive, and the opportunity.
What motive?
A nude photo of my client. Jealousy. He was in love with her. Afterwards, he committed suicide off the pier.
What have you left out, Marlowe?
My client is entitled to protection short of a grand jury. I suppose the word private has some meaning. You have the killers, the guns, and the motives. The blackmail angle has to be suppressed.
Sure. I'd be glad to stooge for a Seamus of your standing.
The grand jury might also want to know how Geiger ran a smut book racket out in the open and why the police allowed it to operate for their own reasons.
Grand juries do ask these embarrassing questions sometimes in a rather vain effort to find out just why cities are run as they are run.
Yeah, well, look, I'm one against three here. I'm a homicide man. Book's on my beat. I'll take my prisoner now.
He's waiting outside. Come with me.
Well, Marlowe, do you know why I'm not tearing your ear off?
I expected to get both ears torn off. Mm.
What are you getting for it all?
$25 a day in expenses.
Just over $50 so far?
About that.
And for that, you're willing to get yourself in Dutch with half the law enforcement here.
Well, what the hell am I to do? It's against my principles to have told as much as I did tonight without consulting the general. Cops get very large and emphatic when an outsider tries to cover up. But they do the same themselves every day to oblige their friends or anybody with a little pull. I'm still on the case.
Yeah, providing Kronjager doesn't get your license. Look, Marlowe, my father was a close friend of old Sternwood. I've done all I can to save him from grief. And we can save him from this one, provided you make a complete statement for the files. But in the long run, it can't be done. Not with those two daughters. They oughtn't to be running around loose. And I blame him for that. I guess he doesn't realize what the world is today. And there's another thing. I'll bet the general is afraid his runaway son-in-law that he was so fond of is mixed up in this somehow. And what he really hoped you would find out is that he isn't.
The general didn't ask me to find Regan or protect him.
Hmm. Well, be careful, Marlowe.
Marlowe?
Yeah. Move away from my door.
The boss wants to talk to you.
What about?
What do you care? Just keep your nose clean and everything will be Jake.
I smell of policemen. I'm too tired to talk, too tired to eat, too tired to think. But if you think I'm not too tired to take orders from Eddie Mars, try getting your gat out before I shoot your ears off.
Nuts. You don't carry a gun.
I'm not always naked.
Okay, you win. I wasn't told to blast anybody. You'll hear from him.
Too late will be too soon.
Nuts.
He went away. I grinned at my own foolishness and went into my apartment. I cleaned the little gun I had taken from Carmen and put it away, then made myself a drink. Yeah?
So you're tough tonight.
Big, fast, and full of prickles. What can I do for you, Mars?
The cops. Did you keep me out of it?
Why should I?
Look, I'm nice to be nice to, soldier. I'm not nice not to be nice to.
Can you hear my teeth chattering?
Did you keep me out of it?
I guess it was complicated enough without you.
Well, thanks, soldier. Someday I may be able to do you a favor.
Hang up and let me go to bed.
You're looking for Rusty Regan, aren't you?
A lot of people seem to think so, but I'm not.
Well, if you were, I could give you an idea. Drop in and see me, soldier. Anytime.
I had one other thing to do. I called the Sternwood house and left a message that everything was all right. And then I went to bed. All the morning papers had accounts. Captain Kronjäger got the credit for solving both murders. The Sternwoods weren't mentioned, nor was I. I went down to missing persons and discovered the general had asked them to look into Regan's disappearance. But they were dead on their feet on it. They told me nothing I couldn't have guessed. A gray sedan tailed me away from City Hall. I shook it off and went about my business, which was to come back to the office and catch up on my foot dangling. I didn't try to contact Mrs. Regan. I'd had a bellyful of the Sternwood family. I had a call from a secretary saying the general might feel well enough tomorrow to thank me in person and that a check for $500 was in the post. I got out the office bottle and took a drink. I should have been happy. Regan. Rusty had certainly skipped with Eddie Marr's wife, but Marr's was too much of a businessman to get involved in murder out of jealousy. It might have annoyed him, but you have to hold your teeth clamped around Hollywood to keep from chewing on stray blondes. The smart thing for me to do was to take another drink and forget the whole mess. That being the obviously smart thing to do, I called Eddie Marrs and told him I was coming down to his club in Los Alindes that evening. That was how smart I was.
Marlowe, have a drink, sit down.
You and I haven't anything to talk about but business.
You'll have a drink and like it. Ever been here before?
Only during Prohibition. I don't get any kick out of gambling.
Well, you should take a look. One of your friends is out there betting the wheels. I hear she's doing pretty well. Vivian Regan. Smoke?
Yeah.
I like the way you handled that yesterday. How much do I owe you?
How much have you got?
You're not talking money?
Information was the way I understood it. You didn't bump Regan off, did you?
No. Oh, did you think I did?
I wouldn't put it past you.
A kidder. You're not really interested in Regan, are you?
I know somebody who is.
Now, she doesn't give a damn.
I mean her father. I think he was half scared Regan was behind the blackmail.
Geiger worked it on his own. I happen to hear things in my business.
Yeah.
I wish I didn't know half the stuff that's brought to me. You know, knowing other people's business is the worst investment a man can make in my circle. But if the general didn't hire you to find Regan, your job is over.
I've been paid off.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry about that. He should hire himself a soldier like you to keep those girls home a few nights. You take the dark one. She has no money of her own, and nobody knows what's in the old man's will. If she wins here, she takes the money. If she loses, I end up with a fistful of promise notes.
Tough.
Oh, maybe I can do you a real favor someday. But all I know about Regan, you've already got from missing persons.
You own a piece of them, too?
Like I said, it's brought to me.
You don't have anybody tailing me in a gray sedan, do you?
Well, hell no. Why should I?
Boss.
What is it?
It's Mrs. Regan.
Well, what about her?
Well, she's on the street. Roulette. 8 wins and 2 standouts in a row. On the red.
How much?
$1,000 a crack. $16,000 on the table, and she still wants to play.
You want to watch this, Marlowe?
I'll be one of the crowd.
Busy and spin the wheel, high pockets. I want one more play.
If you would just be patient a moment, madame, the table cannot cover your bed.
What kind of a cheap outfit is this? Spin the wheel. It's your money. Don't you want it back?
Something the matter, Mrs. Regan?
Give me one more play, Eddie. Everything I have is on red. I like red. It's the color of blood.
Cover her bet in even thousands. If no one objects, this play is only for the lady.
Spin the wheel.
Red pay.
And another six $1,000 bills. That covers the bet. I hope you enjoyed your evening, Mrs. Regan. Good night.
Yeah, this is a gun lady. Gentle now. Sound carries in this Pacific fog. Just hand me the bag with the money in it.
Nice work, Marlowe. Are you my bodyguard now?
Let's go. Did you come by car?
I came with a man. He passed out somewhere along the way. Very nice escort. You should see him sober. I should see him sober. Somebody should see him sober. I mean, just for the record, so it could become part of history, that brief, flashing moment soon buried in time, but never forgotten.
Yeah.
I even thought of marrying him at odd times when nothing pleasant would come into my mind. Lots of money, you know. What are you doing here, Marlowe?
Eddie Mars wanted to see me.
I didn't know you knew him. Let's ride in your car. Oh, take me away from here.
Two coffees, black, strong, and made this year.
Are you going to put that whiskey in there, mister?
Just a smattering.
It's against the law to drink liquor in here.
Oh, I won't tell anybody.
Oh, okay. I'll watch the street while you pour the booze.
My heart's in my mouth doing this.
I could get as drunk as two sailors and love it.
Remember, I saw nothing.
Oh, here's to it. You have wicked eyes. What has Eddie Mars got on you?
What I won tonight, I won with the $5,000 I borrowed off him yesterday and didn't have to use.
That might make him sore. You think he sent that Lugan after you?
What's a Lugan?
A guy with a gun.
Are you a Lugan?
Sure. But strictly speaking, a Lugan is on the wrong side of the fence.
I often wonder if there is a wrong side.
What hold is Eddie Mars on you?
Wittier, please, Marlowe. Much wittier.
How's the general?
Not too well.
How much does he know?
While the DA was out to see him, did you burn those pictures?
Sure. You worry about your little sister, don't you, from time to time?
I think she's all I do worry about. I worry about Dad, in a way, to keep things from him.
He hasn't any illusions.
Where is his blood? That's the hell of it. I don't want him to die despising his own blood. It was always wild blood, but it wasn't always rotten blood.
Is it now?
I guess you think so.
You're just playing the part.
So you shoot people. You're a killer.
Me?
I don't believe all I read in the papers.
Oh, you think I accounted for Geiger, or Brody, or both of them? I didn't have to, though neither of them would have hesitated to throw lead at me.
That makes you just a killer at heart, like all cops. One of those dark, deadly, quiet men who have no more feelings than a butcher has for slaughtered meat. I knew it the first time I saw you.
Thanks, lady. You're no English muffin yourself.
Let's get out of this rotten little town. The fog's gone. Look at the surf.
Yeah.
Move closer. Hold me close, killer. Where do you live?
Hobart Arms.
I've never seen it.
Want to?
Yes.
What has Eddie Mars got on you?
You bastard. So that's the way it is.
Well, kissing is nice, but your father didn't hire me to sleep with you.
Men have been shot for little things like that, Marlowe.
Men have been shot for practically nothing. The first time I met you, I told you I was a detective. Get it through your lovely head, lady. I work at it. I don't play at it. Eddie Mars let you win a lot of money. He sent a Lugan to get it back. I think you weren't surprised. I think it was an act staged for my benefit. What has he got on you?
I loathe you, Mr. Detective. If I had a razor, I'd cut your throat just to see what ran out of it.
Caterpillar blood. I liked kissing you.
Take me away from here, if you would be so kind.
I took her home. She didn't speak again. This time, nobody was waiting outside my apartment.
I didn't switch the light on because I needed a drink bad and was in a hurry to get one, so I headed straight for the kitchenette. I brought up short in 3 or 4 feet. Something was wrong. Something on the air. A scent.
Put the light on. I look cute. Aren't I cute?
Carmen.
I'm all undressed here in the bed.
My God.
Want to see?
Yeah, nice. But I've already seen it all. Remember? I'm the guy that keeps finding you without any clothes on.
I like it here.
Listen, I'm tired. I appreciate all you are offering me. It's just more than I could possibly take. I'm your friend. We have to keep on being friends, and this isn't the way. Now, will you dress like a nice little girl?
No.
You don't really care anything about me. You're just showing me how naughty you can be.
Put the light out.
It isn't on account of the neighbors. One more stray broad in this apartment house will make the building rock. It's a question of professional pride. You know, professional pride. I'm working for your father. He's a sick man, very frail, very helpless. He sort of trusts me not to pull any stunts.
Put the light out.
Get dressed, Carmen.
You shit!
I didn't mind what she called me, but this was the room I had to live in. It was all I had in the way of a home. It was everything that was mine, that had any association for me, any past, anything that took the place of a family. Not much. A few books, pictures, radio, chessmen, old letters, stuff like that. Nothing. Such as they were, they had all my memories. I couldn't stand her in that room any longer. I gave her 3 minutes to get out. She went, hissing at me, that sharp sound she made when she was mad, and left me looking at my bed and the imprint of her small, corrupt body on it. I tore the bed to pieces. You can have a hangover from other things than alcohol. I had one from women. The next morning, I still wanted to say to hell with Rusty Regan and the Sternwood daughters. But I couldn't forget Carmen hissing at me and the way she looked. It was like a scene that had been played before. Then a gray sedan followed me all the way to the office. I decided I was tired of being followed. I was tired of being lied to. I wanted some answers.
That was part two of The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler, dramatized for radio by Bill Morrison, with Ed Bishop as Philip Marlowe. Production for the BBC was by John Tiedemann.